Hello once again and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live daily afternoon call-in talk show, and I'm Alan Chartok. As shockwaves from the Paris terrorist attacks that killed 129 people and injured hundreds continue to cross the globe, pieces of the puzzle who is behind it are falling into place. Here at home in the United States, the debate rages as to whether we should take in Syrian refugees. Dozens of governors, including those of Massachusetts and New Hampshire, are arguing that we deny refugees as a matter of homeland security. That's what they want. We brought in an expert today. Professor Rick Matthews is the director of the University at Albany's National Center for Security and Preparedness. Professor Matthews studies issues related to terrorism, homeland security, and disaster response, including how to help victims of the attacks and the role of immigration in the planning and coordination of attacks, in addition to how to respond to ISIS threats against the country. We want you, obviously, in the conversation, as we always do. Give us a call at 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. You can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop, and you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Well, welcome, Professor. I'm delighted that you're here with us and that you've taken the time during what has to be a very busy schedule for you.
Happy to be here, Alan.
Well, Rick, tell me, let's start and say, who's right in this and who's wrong in this? Should we let those Syrians in, the immigrants in, and refugees or not?
Well, I think the real question isn't really what country they're from. It's should we let in people who are not of our country and the issue of potential terrorists. And we've been a country all along of wanting people to come here. We've been the melting pot of the world. And that's one of the things that makes America great. On the other hand, we want to be safe. And anytime you have a big influx of people of any nationality or race or creed, some bad actors can come in with them. And so the question becomes is, how do we best weed out bad actors from an otherwise good group of folks?
Can we do it?
I think we can. The question is, can we do it quickly and how efficiently? Nothing's perfect.
Yeah. So how do you do it? Do you interview every one of them? We have had some success here in the United States in terms of letting people on airplanes. They use the same kind of techniques?
Well, yes, and somewhat. We have to look at everybody. I think we have to look at their backgrounds as much as we can, find out if there's any records on them, and we have to talk to them. I think just simply interviewing and talking to people, it takes time, is one of the best ways to begin to initially assess whether or not these people have some concerning behavior that we may be interested in that deserves further attention.
Okay, one last question here before we take Francine's. Francine is on the phone from France. First question I have for you is, how about it? Are we doing the right thing in Syria itself? Should we go over there and should we put boots on the ground?
Boy, I tell you what, there's people at a much higher pay grade than mine have to wrestle with those decisions. But, you know, the best way to stop terrorists and stop bad guys is stop them where they start. And it's far better to stop them where they start than it is to stop them back here at home. And I think we've been looking at various ways to do that. I think we've seen some escalation in our approach. And I think that we're going to see that continue.
All right, let's go to Francine, 1-800-348-2551. Francine, thanks for your patience. So welcome to the program.
You're welcome. I think we, by going there, we're just fueling more wars, you know, wars of vengeance, and I don't think that's the best way to do that. And we have to see ourselves as one people, one world, one nation, as we march on our path of enlightenment. And I think the sorrow and the pain and the atrocity committed are indeed shocking. But when you think of these young men who did what they did, in truth, they have no future. They show tremendous courage to have committed these crimes. Because when you see them living in the ghettos of Europe, of Paris, where I come from, then you realize that there is nothing for them. There's no job. There's tremendous alienation. And this is just nurturing more of the Islamist phobia, which is very tragic for me.
Rick?
Well, that's an interesting viewpoint. You know, and we are in the United States where we have a lot of different views and ideas and opinions and beliefs, and that's, again, what makes us very great. It's true some people who become terrorists are, in fact, trying to find something better. In some cases, they come from the very worst parts of life and downtrodden, and they're looking for a way out. On the other hand, there are terrorists. One of the best examples was bin Laden, who definitely was not poor or destitute. And so we have to look at people that way, not necessarily from just where they're from, but looking at their attitudes and their behavior and the potential threat to us.
Interesting.
I understand, but bin Laden was also Bush's best friend, you know? So, and I also think the same way we have here in America, all our Afro-American population, you know, trapped in the ghettos and still fighting for freedom. So it's the same thing. There is nothing much offered for them. And the same way we send American boys to fight the war, many of them go because they have nothing else to do. They hope to come as heroes, and they come back and they're homeless, and there's no work for them. There really isn't.
Well, that's a sad thing, and I understand that. And we certainly want to treat our veterans with the utmost respect and take care of them when they come back. We owe them a huge debt of gratitude for what they do. Actually, we owe them our lives and our safety and security here. So I agree with you that sometimes we don't treat them the way we should.
I voted for Obama twice, so I'm an Obama girl. But, you know, I'm a little disappointed, to be honest with you, Mr. Sharpuck, as well.
Okay. Thank you, Francine.
Thank you. I love your radio station and Phil Donahue and everybody else. John Donahue.
It's Joe. Yeah, it's Joe.
Donahue.
But a lot of people make that mistake. Thank you very much. Thanks,
bye-bye.
Francine. Bye-bye. Okay. And we'll go to Marley in Florence, Massachusetts. Okay, Marley, you're on.
Okay, well, you're saying that we need to trace these terror incidents back to their origin, but the origin really is in Western intelligence circles. I mean, this Paris attack shows all the hallmarks of a false flag. A young man, well built, pulled up to a cafe in a late model Mercedes with blackened windows, and he was about 35, extremely muscular. He looked like a weightlifter. The driver opened the door shortly before the shooting began, and he fired a lot of bullets. He was clean. He was white, clean shaven. Had dark hair, neatly trimmed.
Okay, but Marley, tell us where this is happening. I'm sorry, I'm afraid I'm not getting the context.
Well, this is from the Mirror in the UK.
Uh-huh.
Okay, from an eyewitness, they say that they looked like soldiers or mercenaries and carried the whole thing out like a military operation. It was clear that they were both very heavily armed, and the gunman was carrying several magazines.
Okay, got it. Now tell us why you're telling us this. In other words, what's the philosophical point you're trying to make here?
Well, the point that I'm trying to make, years ago, Karl Rove said about Ron Susskind, the journalist Ron Susskind.
Sure.
Susskind is in what we call a reality-based community, which he defined as people who believe that solutions emerge from your judicious study of discernible reality. That's not the way the world works anymore, he continued. We're an empire now.
Okay, I don't want you to quote anybody right now.
We create our own reality, and while you're studying that reality, judiciously, as you will, we'll act again, creating other new realities, which you can study too, and that's how things will sort out. We're history's actors, and you, all of you, will be left to study what we do. That's what Karl Rove said. And all roads in the 9/11 case lead back to Cheney and Rumsfeld and the Bush crime syndicate. Okay.
Hey, Marley, I thank you for your call. Appreciate it very much. Let's go to let's take a break, and we'll come right back to James in Hudson. Thanks.
So Support comes from the Whistling Kettle, offering gifts for the tea lover, including loose leaf teas, teapots, tea accessories, and subscription Tea of the Month clubs. Ballston Spa, Troy, or online, thewhistlingkettle.com. Berkshire Co-op Market, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, a community-owned natural grocery store dedicated to sustainable agriculture, the local economy, and the environment. Berkshire.coop. The Henyon Bakery, Amherst, since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com. Upstate Divorce Mediation, specializing in divorce mediation and collaborative divorce, helping couples who are seeking a legal separation or divorce. Offices in Albany, Saratoga, and Catskill. UpstateDivorceMediation.com. And Agricultural Stewardship Association, helping people conserve farmland in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve good farmland for good forever. AGStewardship.org.
Okay, we're back, and we'll go to James in Hudson. James, you're on.
Hi, yes, thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
I just wanted to say, someone made a very good point this morning on the roundtable that we do have to let these people in, because it's a shame that we didn't let, you know, a lot of the Jews during the beginning of the Second World War before it happened. And we also... you know, my grandfather came here. He was Irish. He was probably in the IRA, as far as we know. And he did, you know, and he came here and he was a pacifist the rest of his life. It was never, you know, he never tried to hurt anybody. But he was, you know, involved in that. And he came here and it was a very peaceful person. And if one out of 1,000 people, we have to look at the 1,000 people, not the one. And also, you know, I think we do have to do something about ISIS or whatever we don't want to call them, you know, because I think they're, you know, they're really terrible people. And they're, you know, I think they're worse than the Nazis, because at least the Nazis had shame.
I don't know that they did, but we could talk about that for the next...
Well, that's a whole other show.
Yeah, that's a whole other show. But you make a number of very good points, I think. You know, I think that, you know, these people, these refugees are people who... you know, are taking the worst kinds of chances just to get the hell out of where they are, because they have children, because they have husbands and wives, and they are willing to get into boats that have a very good chance of sinking and everything else. And yet, because one bad actor emerges, and we don't even know if that's true, by the way. We know that there was.
I wouldn't get into one of those boats across the Hudson.
Well, you might
let
have,
alone cross
you,
the Mediterranean.
You might have to if it meant your life. I mean, I think that's
no,
the thing.
No, if it meant your life, yeah, of course I would. Yeah, these people are running for their lives.
Yeah, they are. Well, Rick, you have anything to add to this?
Well, you know, again, as I said before, the United States, my gosh, we're a melting pot. We have been that way. And it makes us, again, one of the things that gives us the greatness that we are. And I think that, you know, my heart reaches out to all the folks that are trying to escape their... the poverty and the pain and the suffering they go through in many of these areas. I think we as a nation have been trying to help them back where they live.
Sure.
I think that coming here to America is always a lot of people's goals. And I think that for those folks that are trying to get here, want to do the right for the right reasons, and have really nothing no harm, no malice in their will to come here, I think we should consider bringing those people here. But again, we have to remember this tragedy in Paris only took 8 to 10 people to do that. We saw what's happened in 2008 in Mumbai, India. It took 10 bad actors to kill hundreds of people and injure thousands of people. So again, sometimes that 1 out of 1,000, that's what a lot of people get paid for, to keep us safe, to protect us from them.
Well, okay, so in my state, Massachusetts, I live over the border there, our governor, who has been acting like pretty much like a Democrat otherwise, all of a sudden started to hew the Republican line, and it does look like a Republican line from the governors, and say we can't let them in. He's got his finger up in the air, obviously, seeing which way the voters are concerned, potential voters are concerned, and people will give up almost anything for imagined or otherwise security that they believe in.
Well, that's true, and I think, you know, again, I think that We, again, making this great. We are a nation of lots of different people's beliefs and ideas and values. But we have to be safe. And this is a tough call. It's not because the people are from Syria or they're from any other country. It's because we're concerned about people who may come in with them who mean us harm.
Well, you're the expert. You're the expert, Rick.
Right.
And so a question I have for you is, how do you do that? How do you make sure that the bad actors get found out?
Well, one thing is we can never be 100% sure. I think we all know that. I mean, anybody who thinks that we can be 100% perfect in sifting this out is just it's not in reality. However, we look at the people come in. They come across. We identify these individuals. We look at their backgrounds to the extent we can, and we talk to them and try to, again, ascertain why they want to come here. And again, I think in that process, it doesn't have to be painful. It doesn't have to be very long. Particularly in this era, we have now of information, we can get a lot of people processed pretty quickly. And I think that it also lets us know who they are. And I think by doing that, we can probably screen out a lot of the
Okay, very quickly, James, go ahead.
Might I add one more thing,
sure.
Just quickly? My grandfather, which you do remember him saying this, he said he knew more Irishmen than were shot by other Irishmen than were ever shot by the English.
Yeah, interesting.
And that's, that's history.
That's history.
I'm going to let you talk to other people.
James, thank you very much for your call. Appreciate
okay.
it. All
Bye.
Right. We'll go to, I guess we'll go to Mary in Newburgh. Mary.
Is it Marie in Newburgh?
It must be. It says Mary, but I'm sure
okay.
Mary and Marie, there was a song like that, wasn't there? Yeah. George M.
Okay.
Cohen. Yeah.
I'm going to be very, very brief. I think that we really have to boil this down to black versus white, and I mean that in the literal sense. I think that the Mideast is a mess, a cauldron of all these nationalities of different color that are really, are you with me or against me? And we are brainwashed worldwide because we can't see the forest for the trees. We're getting into, they hate this person, they hate that person, and why? And when they're picking little things that are nonsense, instead of looking at the big picture, which is there's resources there, we have countries that want to take over the other person, or the other country. I'm not making a lot of sense, excuse me, I just woke up, I haven't had my breakfast, but feel that the Syrian people in their families are fleeing for their lives, and they are, as one of the commentators said, they can be vetted and they can be seen as clear to go and to come in. But the ones that are bin Laden types, they have the Mercedes Benzes, some of them are representative of their people, like Castro was of his. He was a lawyer. He was an educated man, but he saw the suffering that he was going, that they were going through with Batista, and so he took it upon himself with his group to do what had to be done.
Okay, so Mary, because there are a lot of people behind you. The short answer is your point is we have to see the forest from the trees, obviously. But what would you have us do?
You have to settle the Palestinian question. I think most of the Middle East would say that we don't want our Palestinian brothers and sisters to have no homeland because there go us. After them, there go us. So I think there's a real hegemony of a power that's being reasserted, and there's a realignment of power principles.
And how would you, okay, fair enough. Mary, how would you settle that Palestinian question?
Oh, are you kidding?
No, I'm not
it's
kidding.
It's going to take a lot of work and a lot of honesty. We're all dishonest. We are all brainwashed, and we're all dishonest.
Now, the reason I'm not kidding, you said, are you kidding? The reason I'm not kidding is because a lot of minds, much better than mine, I don't know about yours, but much better than mine, presidents and top people have been trying to get that one done, and they haven't been able to do it.
They keep getting the obstacle of the money is in the way. It's always about the money. Follow the money, and then you'll find what's at the other end of it. It's always resources, this country, and the people in it are just being brainwashed.
Okay. Okay, Mary. We'll do a whole show on this pretty soon. Thanks very much for calling.
Okay.
Appreciate it. Yeah. Let's go to James in Highland. Okay, James, you're on.
Good afternoon, Alan. How are you, sir?
So far, so good. Don't ruin it.
That's a good one. I just want to comment as far as the refugees are concerned. My father, I happen to be a first-generation Sicilian. My father came from Sicily. My father was substantially older than my mother. He was a World War I veteran. He came over. Everything's documented. He came through the island. He planted his roots here in New York. The opportunity came for World War I. He put the uniform on. He went and he fought for our country, came back positively, contributed to our nation, and he assimilated. He didn't try to change anything, you know, bring his cultures and his lifestyles here. But my thing about the refugees is, let me ask you this. If our country was under attack, what would you do as a member of this nation? What would you do?
Mm. So that's the question you would ask anybody who's coming in.
Exactly. No. Well, as far as the refugees are concerned, it's always been women and children first. And that's where I stand, with the women and the children first. If you look at the age groups of a lot of these refugees that are coming in, these guys are all healthy young men. You know, what are you going to offer us if you're fleeing here? What if our country becomes under attack? You're going to go flee someplace else.
Okay, so we ask them the question, what answer do you want?
Well, the answer I'm looking for is, how come we just don't allow the women and children in, secure an area for them, and these young men that are of capable fighting, okay, go back and fight for your country. They need somebody to lead them. They need somebody to rally them together, and they need to push away all the aggression that's been going on in their country.
Now, Professor Rick Matthews, you are nodding your head. What are you thinking?
Well, it's an interesting concept. I mean, one is that, again, people come here, I think, and as his father did, I think if you come here and make this your country, you should want to protect your new country. On the other hand, if you live in a country and you're able and capable of it and you love that country, you should want to protect it as well. And I think he makes a very compelling statement. I think that it also would be an interesting statement to ask the people come here. If you're young and you're able-bodied and you want to live in the United States, are you willing to serve and protect this country if you come here? It'd be a good question to ask them.
Mm. Okay, James, thanks for that. Okay, 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to Roger in Gloversville. Okay, Roger, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I have heard and read that countries such as Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and those countries don't accept refugees from Syria. Is that correct? And if so, what impact should that have on us? Personally, I don't think it should have any impact. I think we're a country that accepts immigrants, and that's the way it should be.
Well, this is right. I tend to agree with you. I think that we should not necessarily regard any country they come from. That's a country or their race or their nationality, in my opinion, has actually nothing to do with whether or not they're good or bad people or can hurt us. It's about do they have indicators of being a terrorist? And if they do, we ought to keep them out. If they don't, I'm all about letting people come here under our provisions and our processes and living here, again, without regard to what country. Other countries have done differently.
Well, Rick, Jeb Bush said the other day when pressed that maybe we should only allow Christian Syrians to come into the country. That is something that you don't subscribe to, obviously.
No, some things he says I agree with. I'm not really sure how that one got out. I don't think we're not a country. We never have been, and I hope we never become one, that is all just about one race, one religion, one belief, one way of doing anything.
Okay. Roger, thank you for your call. Appreciate it. Okay. Let's go to, I think it may be Jules, but I'm not sure. Number three, who are you?
Yeah, hi. This is Jules from Hillsdale.
Jules, my friend Jules. How are you?
Okay, Ellen. Good show today. A couple of points. First, a question. With the refugee and migrant flow into Europe is coming not only from Syria, but also from North Africa. And there are, you know, some of them may be fleeing for the same reason. Some of them may be economic migrants. I'm assuming that we're talking specifically and only about Syrian refugees that have been identified as Syrian. Is that correct?
No. We could talk about anything you want to talk about.
Okay. I think,
Jules, obviously, that there will be people who are coming in via the same routes. They're going everywhere else in Europe and trying to. But, you know, I keep thinking of Willie Horton. Is that a bad analogy? You know, Willie Horton was one guy who got let out and then committed a crime. All it's going to take to see, I got you, I told you, is going to be one bad actor who does something despicable
Sure.
You know, over here. It
Sure.
doesn't matter whether they're Syrian or whether they're from any of the other countries, but obviously the problem will be the same across the board.
Right. Well, a couple of points.
Sure.
You know, that photo that appeared a while back with the little girl,
yep.
at the, you know, drowned, lying on the beach.
Right.
A big outpouring of grief and so on and so forth, and sympathy for that, and, oh, gosh, we were all for it. Let's bring the Syrian refugees in. A little bit of, you know, granted the situation in Paris was horrendous, and if it happened in the middle of New York, it'd be horrendous as well.
That's a very good point.
But, you know, what happened to our if you will, our backbone? What happened to our moral fiber? And with respect to moral fiber, you know, the U.S. and the West is at least partially responsible for what's going on in Syria right now. You know, it's regime change all over, except we don't have the boots. Well, we have, 500 people on the ground now, but we don't have boots on the ground like we did in Iraq to take out Saddam Hussein. But, you know, Assad is the villain, is the characterized as the monster who's gassing his own people, weapons of mass destruction.
Yep.
You know, I'm here in regime change all over again, and because of that and our involvement in Syria, you know, we do really have a moral responsibility to do something about the Syrian refugees.
You mean if you break it, you own it?
Yeah.
Jules,
or at least with respect to doing something about these refugees who are truly free of fleeing the terror in their own country and the fear of death and so on, we have to do something to support them.
Okay. Jules, thank you for that, as always. Appreciate
okay.
it. Okay. All the phones are ringing, so I'm going fast. Paul in Germantown. Paul in Germantown, are you there?
Yes. Here I am.
Okay, good. Here we are. Go ahead.
Well, I turned my radio off. It sounded like somebody said the same thing I did, that if the attack took place in New York City.
He did. He just said the same thing, yeah.
Yeah. And,
One second. I just have to instruct our very good friend who is taking the stuff down. Let's start from that side. That's number one. You want to tell her that side will be number one. Okay. No. But Zach will explain it to you. Yeah. One should be there. Okay. Go ahead. I was just a little confused about how we were doing this, Paul. Go ahead.
Well, anyways, you know, what I was saying was,
if it was in New York City, the reaction would be different than if it was in France.
Exactly. And it's just like when, you know, everybody was out for blood after 9/11.
Right.
I mean, let's face it. You know, it's the same consciousness that the American public always exhibits. It's the isolationist thinking that it's over there. It's not here. Let's not worry about
it. Okay, so what do you want to do?
Well, I just think that we as a nation need to be more involved politically in a worldwide sense, the way the Europeans are, the way the people in the Middle East are. Most of the people are walking around unconscious, you know, and don't care in this country. And I think that that is part of our big problem.
Okay, assuming it's our problem, Paul, what do you want to do? In other words, what do you want the president to do? What do you want the Congress to do? What do you want the governors to do?
I think men of fighting age should not be let in. They should stay and resolve their issues in their country. I think that other Muslim and Arab countries should accept as many of the refugees as they possibly can, because I feel there's a vast cultural difference. Most of these people coming over here, they have no concept of what it's like to live in America. You know, their ability to adjust without, like, getting, you know, into an impoverished ghetto and breeding more resentment and hatred, that's what's going to happen. We're going to have more people who are being bred to hate and resent just out of jealousy, seeing Americans driving around in big cars, you know, totally unconscious of what it's like to live in an impoverished world. And the cultural difference is going to breed more hatred and more resentment.
Paul, thanks for checking in. I very much appreciate it. Thanks again. Okay, we'll go to RJ in Schenectady. Okay, RJ, you're on. You're on, RJ. Hello, RJ. Hello. Okay, so that's it, that for it for RJ. We'll take a short break, Zach, and we'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Curtis Lumber, celebrating 125 years supporting our communities with sales, service, and supplies at 21 locations in New York and Northern Vermont. CurtisLumber.com. Albany Realty Group, a local woman-owned real estate company since 2003, educating and counseling sellers and buyers throughout the real estate transaction. AlbanyRealtyGroup.com. Waterwheel Village, Galway, New York, specializing in extra-sharp New York cheddar since 1923, offering imported cheddars, specialty cheeses, nostalgic candies, local baked goods, honey, and maple products in every corner of our store. WaterwheelVillage.com. Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine, New York, providing eye exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and more. Where eyewear is an art, Facebook or VisionExcelEyeCare.com. And the Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond. Skidmore.edu/Tang.
1-800-348-2551, but all five phones are blinking off the hook right now. 1-800-348-2551. Wait a second until somebody gets off. Now, I want to give you all a little pointer about what to do. When you get on the when our wonderful volunteer talks to you on the phone, listen through the phone. Don't go listen in your radio because there's an 8-second delay. And if you're listening in there, then you probably will not you will be missed. Okay, just in case in point, RJ, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes. Okay. I'm sorry. I didn't know I was on. All right. I wanted to just make a couple of points and also had a question.
Okay, but okay, RJ, but it's got to be quick because we got five people on the phone and we want to give everybody a chance. Go ahead.
All right. So the first point I wanted to make is that I don't think that this ISIS and these terrorist attacks that are going on now have a thing to do with Palestinian problem. I think it's just extreme fundamentalist violence towards non-believers.
Okay.
And the second point I wanted to make out is that I think that our country should bring in some of the refugees. I think it's almost guaranteed that one or two of them will one day do something bad. And the third point I want to make is that I think our society needs to remind everybody that terrorism is all around. It could happen any time, and that we should all be more alert and more careful.
You're right. You're exactly right. Okay, RJ, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Okay, let's go to Richard in Schenectady. Richard, you're on.
Hi, gentlemen.
Hey.
For your guest, I'd like to ask you, do you think these terrorists in Paris were a lone group, or do you think ISIS has intentionally slipped many of their members into this refugee exodus?
Well, I think the attacks were not random. I think they were well-planned and well-carried out. If you're asking me, would ISIS consider slipping potential terrorists into the refugee as they move into other countries?
A lot of them.
I think absolutely they will. And I think or any other terrorist would do that. I think that's an absolutely right on spot on, which is why we're being so cautious in many places about allowing a lot of new people in very, very rapidly like this.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Richard?
Pardon me?
What do you think?
I think they do. I think they're doing that. I think it's very strategic from their point of view, and they're not a stupid group. Could we put them in? I know this isn't going to sound good. Could they put them in like one area of the country, and maybe put borders around it, but give them a lot of money to build buildings, to mm-hmm. develop their own businesses? I mean, how would that differ from the Japanese internment camps? Wouldn't it be a lot more free, to allow them a lot more freedom than what we did with the Japanese?
When we tried to find a place that we would put all the spent nuclear fuel in this country, no state wanted it. And it became an election issue. I know the analogy may be a little strained, but you know, go find me a state which is going to say, yeah, sure, you know, come here.
Well, or Or Northern Canada or something like that.
Oh, sure.
Very populated now.
Sure, they'll
do a lot of warm clothes.
The Canadians will do what we want. Go ahead, Rick.
Well, I was going to say, you know, his point is interesting because I think we found out that what we did at the start of World War II was probably not our most shining moment in terms of how we treated people coming in.
I don't know how much freedom they had, though. I take it they didn't have much.
No, not a lot. They did not have a lot.
They didn't. But the other thing is remembering that people come here to be free. That's what America is about. And to me, bringing people, allowing people in, you either can come in or you can't. You know, if you come in and we embrace you and you become part of our country, that's what it should be. If you can't come in that way, then you shouldn't be here. I just don't want to have a second-class area where all of a sudden we get fences put up and we are segregating a population.
Well, I don't either, but all it would take is one or two terrorist attacks, and then we'd be waging war just like France has decided to do immediately after this happened.
Richard, thank you for your call. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you, guys.
Okay, now the next number looks unclear to me. Looks like it was sort of number two. Okay. Mark, you're in Massachusetts. Go ahead.
Yes, in Whately, Mass. Thank you for the show. It's been fascinating to listen to. I had a couple of comments and a question.
Sure.
One was related to your comment about the, let's say, the Republican governors being disingenuous in their refusal to take new refugees after the Paris attacks.
Right.
I would comment that it's probably self-serving in some respects, not as a Republican issue, but trying not to be the governor that allows them in and have some tragedy happen after
that's
the fact.
That's what I said, Willie Horton. That's exactly the right. It's exactly why. That's part of it. The other part of it is, of course, they hate Obama, and they'll do anything
yes.
to embarrass Obama during this whole thing. I think that's right. Now, if you ask me, would I make the choice? Sure, I'd let him in.
It's a really good thing to think about and to do in the near, the here and now, but the tragedy would be if anything happened like a Paris attack under that governor's watch, it would be an incredible embarrassment for them politically.
Well, of course, they know that. That's exactly right, and that's my Willie Horton analogy, and you got that right. Mark, thanks.
Never an easy answer.
And the other
quick comment was I really liked the idea of part of the screening process would be to see if these young men would be willing to fight for their own native country in a U.S.-backed boots-on-the-ground coalition where they would be trained and armed and asked to provide a freedom force, if you will, with our support back in their homeland.
Gotcha. Okay.
Anyway,
thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, let's go to... David was number four and you wanted to tell us something about Ben Franklin, huh, David?
I did, Alan. I think that, that this business of thinking of only about our safety puts everything else that we stand for aside. And a couple of centuries ago, Ben Franklin said something like, "They that can give up essential liberty to obtain a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety."
I'm writing a column on that very point right now.
Well, I think that's worth remembering.
And the "they" in this case is overwhelming number of people who say, "I don't want them in this country because I'm interested in my personal safety and my children's personal safety." And then what happens is they come along, the other "they"s come along and take your civil liberties away. And pretty soon your phone calls are being listened to, your email is being read, and along comes a J. Edgar Hoover type who may be interested in much more than protecting people's security. That's the balance.
And you're safe, but you're not free.
Well, and I don't know how safe you are.
I don't either.
I don't know how safe you are.
I think a real conservative would remember things like that.
Yeah, well, that's right. Thank you, David. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Alan.
Yeah, bye. Let's go to another Dave in Berkshire, Massachusetts. Dave, you're on.
Hey, Alan.
Hey.
Hey, I just wanted to say that as far as immigration as a generalization goes, for many, many years, generations, immigrants came to this country because they wanted to be American. I think that's changed. I think people now immigrate here because they want to get away from where they are, but they don't necessarily want to be Americans. And I'm not sure that's a good thing.
Professor?
Well, you know, that's a very, very interesting concept. I was listening to him, and I was starting to really make me think, and I almost daydreamed for a moment. You're absolutely right. People used to come here back in the day because they really wanted to come here and cherish American values and wanted to be an American, become a citizen of this great country. And I think you're right. I think today, although let's not forget, a lot of people coming here want to do that very, they have that very same dream. But there's an awful lot of people, I think, probably coming here because they're running away from something else and not running toward us and our values. And I think that may be become a discriminator down the road. We ought to maybe look at that. I would hate to keep people from coming here who truly want this as their dream to be an American and just have people come here because they're running away from something else.
Well, we've had a lot of different views on that today. A lot of people have been calling up with different views on it. You know, I think a lot of people, Dave, for whatever it's worth, did get out because things were terrible where they were. They got here and they became good Americans. You know, I don't know that one can pass that kind of litmus test, but it's a very interesting call, Dave. Thank you for making it. Appreciate it.
All right. See
you. Okay. Let's go to Diane. Okay, Diane, also in Massachusetts. Okay, Diane, you're on.
Hi, Alan.
Hey.
I'm happy that I'm a Democrat, but I'm happy that we have a Republican governor right now. I agree with him completely.
Yeah.
I think we have our own impoverished and repressed people here in the country looking for jobs, housing, and food.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take care of our own. And the other point is we have a lot of problems deterring cyber attacks, all the espionage and the intelligence necessary for other problems. Why should we waste it vetting people?
Well, there is the question as to they're running away, drowning their children and the rest of it. Are you sure that part of American spirit isn't taking care of others?
I think it's taking care of us.
I'm sorry?
I think it's taking care of us first. If we had the with world...
So you think it's an either-or situation?
I'm sorry?
You think it's either-or?
Well, I think if this was utopia in our country, fine, but I don't think we're at that point.
Diane, I appreciate your call. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Yeah, bye. Let's go to, who is this? Also Diane? Yeah, another Diane. Okay, Diane in Massachusetts, is that you?
This is me, and okay. I have thought similar to the previous Diane. My comment is that while the photographs of the dead children and the thought of these families and people just absolutely helpless and homeless is heartbreaking. Nobody's addressing the financial aspect of the moral side of bringing needy people into our country, which is a wonderful concept, but the financial side is there are so few municipalities and towns and school systems that can afford to just adopt the neediest of the needy that we need to prioritize, as the previous woman said, focus on our own people first and the veterans that have no support after they've been out defending our country. And I'm not saying there's a right or wrong answer.
Diane, yeah. Let me just interrupt for a moment. I think we've got your essential point here.
Sure.
But there are four people behind you. I want to try to give everybody a chance. Thanks so much.
Yeah. I'm glad I called. Thanks.
Yeah, bye-bye. Let's go to Anna in Altamont. Anna in Altamont, you're on.
Oh, thank you. Well, my personal background is that as a child, my family and I escaped from communist Czechoslovakia because my mother was going to be imprisoned. And we landed in West Germany where we were in a refugee camp for a year. And then because my parents just didn't want to languish in a refugee camp, we ended up for 2 years in West Pakistan, which had just been after the partition, where they were in the Pakistani army. helping Pakistan get its military operations in order. And so we waited 3 years to come here, and it was part of a process. Yes, my mother would have been imprisoned, and my family would have been terrorized, but somehow the expectation wasn't that we would be taken care of. So I think as we look at this, you know, there are two parts to it. There are the people who are fleeing from war, and then there are the people who are looking for economic opportunity. With the latter group, it seems to me that there are channels through our State Department to get green cards and visas and to wait in line and to become part of our American society. For the people who are terrorized, who are facing war and hardship and are fleeing, for those reasons, I don't think it's just a European Union and an American problem. I think it's a United Nations problem. And
okay.
And
I'm going to cut you off only because we've got about 4 minutes left. I want to make sure everybody gets a chance. I do hear you. I understand exactly what you're saying, and I appreciate your call. Thanks again. Okay, let's go to Nico in Duanesburg. But what number is Nico? There's no number on Nico. Hey, Zach, Nico is next, but there's no number on it. You see, Nico in Duanesburg. So the first one is Anna, we just talked to, then is Nico. Number five? Let's see. I don't think so. Okay, Nico, number two. Number two, is that Nico? Is that, what number is that? Number what? Four? Okay, Nico, is that you?
Yeah, that's me.
Okay, very quickly, Nico, we got seconds. Go ahead.
Okay. So coming from a infantry veteran that did time in Iraq, I understand firsthand the destruction and the destabilization that we created in the Middle East region. And I would say that we have a moral obligation to take in refugees.
And you think, well, again, how about Syria? I mean...
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would say Iraq destabilized the region to the point where there was action in Syria.
Gotcha.
But, I mean, even if you wouldn't take that point, I mean, we gave arms to the group al-Nusra Front and the Free Syrian Army, and we gave them weapons and trained them and gave them millions of dollars, and they ended up defecting and just going to ISIS anyway. So, I mean, we literally empowered the enemy. Which is something that U.S. foreign policy seems to love to do.
You know, it's crazy. It's crazy. I've talked about that a number of times. Nico, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Let's go to Michael in Scaticoke. Okay, Michael in Scaticoke, you're on.
Hi, this is Mike.
Yes, and you have seconds. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, I just wanted to say two things. First off, that I believe our government's first duty is to protect us, its people, its citizens. And the second thing I'd like to say is that when 9/11 occurred, I know it wasn't put on the TVs here as much as it was around the rest of the world, but most of the Arab world was thrilled that the towers came down and they were dancing in the streets.
Okay.
And so bringing folks over makes me nervous.
Mike, thank you very much. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm so sorry. Mark in Albany got left at the post here. So did Pat in Albany. Mike says refuse to be terrorized. Pat says take care of the others. Okay. And Robin says not letting gang men in. Why? Young men in. Why? Well, I think people have tried to explain that to you, but I'm with you. Anyway, we're out of time, everybody, and I'm so glad you all called. The lines were jammed for the entire time. Support for the Vox Pop comes from Fort Hill Body Auto Body, Amherst, Massachusetts, locally owned and operated since 1997, providing auto body repair, detailing, painting, and glass replacement. A proud supporter of public radio, FortHillAutoBody.com. Lori Ilvasaka, Caldwell Banker, Village Green Realty, Woodstock, a professional realtor with 30 years of experience specializing in greater Woodstock area home market and in finding acreage for building new, 845-901. 1-800-221-6129. New World Catering by Rick Orlando. Catering holiday parties in the Hudson Valley and Capital Area. Full service or platters to go. NewWorldCatering.com. The Homemade Theater, HMT at the Spa Little Theater, presenting Miracle on 34th Street weekends, December 11th through December 20th at the Spa Little Theater, Saratoga Spa State Park, HomemadeTheater.org. Thanks for everybody for joining us. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Jennifer Stella. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.